Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, Rob Greaves here, and I welcome you to this very special edition of Listen to Older Voices, where we present a program that reflects specifically on the incident involving the Kelly Gang and the police at Stringybark Creek 132 years ago this October, in fact, October 28, 1878. We also look at incidents subsequent to that, which led to the final shootout at Glen Rowan between the police and the Kelly Gang. What makes this program so different is that our story today, and over the next 2 weeks, is based upon the written word of Trooper Thomas McIntyre, the only policeman to have survived the massacre at Stringybark Creek, where the Kelly Gang murdered three policemen. The original document is now in the Victorian Police Museum, but two copies were made for the family when they donated it. One copy is now in the keep of the great-grandson of McIntyre, 66-year-old Laurie Hookey. For this special program, I'm joined by Laurie and his wife Mary Rose, and we call upon the information contained in that document, as well as anecdotal stories handed down in the family, to present a not dissimilar, but certainly a differing view of the story which is now conventionally told. I visited Laurie and Mary in their home just outside the Victorian town of Healesville. Well, I'm sitting with Laurie and Mary right now, and Laurie, maybe we could start by asking you just a little bit about the family background. Now, you are the great-grandson of McIntyre, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
From the mother's side or father's side?
My mother's side.
Now, what about the family? Can you give me just a brief history of how McIntyre got to you?
McIntyre had four children, and he, in his early days before he joined the police force, he became a teacher in New South Wales, and then at a later date he just was attracted to the police force and became a trooper, not a constable, but a trooper in the police force.
What's the difference?
I think a trooper would be a more junior position than a constable.
Most people in Australia are sort of familiar with the story of Ned Kelly, but most of it has almost been sort of had that Hollywood spin on it, that Ned Kelly really has become larger than life these days. I mean, he's a character that really did no wrong. The interesting thing that we'll discover today from the police point of view, that Ned really, well, the Kelly Gang as a whole, really weren't that terrific in terms of nice people.
They weren't, no. And he had a brutal side, I guess, to him. And I don't know, I've often looked at that manuscript that we have and to think that how he come about to even get to where he ended up with it, you know, like he ambushed them in the forest there, and there they, with that one Lonigan making an escape, was the embryo of the whole thing starting.
Well, let's start at the beginning. Can you recall who were the members of the Kelly Gang and who were in that police group at the Stringybark ambush, which is what we're really focusing on today?
Yeah, well, starting with Ned Kelly and his brother Dan Kelly, Joe Byrne, and
Steve Hart.
What about the police?
Police had a sergeant, Sergeant Kennedy. They had a detective, I think it was Scanlon, and Lonigan were detectives, and my grandfather was a trooper.
Okay. We'll be making mention quite a bit today of this manuscript. Can you tell the people listening exactly what is this manuscript?
The manuscript is a narrative that my great-grandfather produced after the episode with the Kellys, and I think a lot of it was also completed after he left the police force. And he, I think, in a way, he wanted to justify his position, and that he was always, he suffered survivor guilt, thinking that he may have deserted his comrades in the time of need, but it was desperation, and he'd seen three of them shot before he deserted the area.
I'd like to look at shortly in some detail of the actual event, but the manuscript itself, is this an official document or is it just like his memoirs?
Well, I guess he calls it a narrative of the Kelly Gang and of that particular day. Yeah, so a lot of the writing in that would have been used as evidence, naturally.
Okay, so this is a first-hand account as through the eyes of somebody who was there.
That's right,
How did it come into your hands?
It came into our hands by my father being a policeman himself and my great-aunt, who was McIntyre's daughter. And up until about 30 years ago, or 40 years ago now, she was still alive. And anyhow, in older age, McIntyre became a little infirmed, and my great-aunt, Jane McIntyre, never married, so she cared for him, and she was all the relics of the Kelly Gang on his side were passed on to her.
So there was more than just the manuscript, when you say relics?
There were photos, and there were handcuffs too.
Did you ever see any of these items?
I did. I saw the photos. We also had the photos here. And at a later stage, Dad decided that they should go to the police archives.
So that's where they are today, are they?
They are, sitting there in the police archives.
So would you say these are a very important part of our history?
I think they are extremely important, with what you were saying before, how everybody reveres Kelly and the two stories, and there's his story and there's our story.
Well, this might be a good chance for us to get into his story.
This is Listen to Older Voices, featuring issues and information. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm speaking with Laurie and Mary Hookey. Laurie is the great-grandson of Trooper McIntyre, the only policeman to have escaped the shootout between the police and the Kelly Gang at Stringy Bark Creek some 132 years ago.
Now, there's an awful lot. It's many pages long, this document, isn't it?
Mm.
One of the things I found interesting in it was that Ned Kelly has often claimed, and certainly the supporters of Ned Kelly claimed, that he was very persecuted by the police, that he was always being entrapped and always being set on. Yet, reading through the document, it seems that McIntyre was asked to investigate this and came up with no evidence. Now, do you think that there probably was no evidence of persecution, or was McIntyre simply, do you think, protecting the police position?
I think Ned Kelly was probably a larrikin, and he drank a bit, he was locked up in Beechworth and different things. And I think he brought a lot of it on upon himself. And I read in the manuscript where he thought that the person he'd shot, he didn't believe that it was the first one, Lonigan, but it was somebody else. And then McIntyre had to reassure him, or he would have been shot, that he was it was Lonigan, and he claimed that Lonigan had given him a belting, and he said a hiding, actually. And anyhow, and then, there, of course, there was the Fitzpatrick problem, where Constable Fitzpatrick had come into the family, and I think he was serving a warrant on the Kellys, or Dan Kelly, and he went to their home in Greta, and he was shot in the wrist by Dan Kelly. And Fitzpatrick was shot in the wrist, and then he was attacked by Eileen Kelly with a fire pan. The law looked very disapprovingly of this, and I think she got about 5 years hard labour. She got jailed, and this is where the bad blood comes into the scene.
So there was a whole series of what we might call minor skirmishes between the police and the Kellys that were gradually leading up to this.
And the catalyst was the Fitzpatrick problem.
It was Fitzpatrick. So Fitzpatrick, as a member of the police force, was not a nice person?
He had a bad name, apparently.
Right.
He wasn't well thought of in the police force.
Right. The police themselves, they were, according to McIntyre's reports, were very heavily armed, but it appears that though they had very little training, and in fact they were apparently armed with rifles and swords, and they had sword training, but very little rifle training.
That's right, yeah. They were issued not... I think the sergeant had a rifle, and in fact, when they went out to apprehend the Kellys, they didn't have their own rifle, but they'd borrowed a rifle from the sawmiller in Mansfield, Monk, who had a very sophisticated type of rifle, and it was very prone to jamming
the
breech with bullets. And I don't think it was ever used, and I think that Kelly acquired that but discarded it, realising that it wasn't all entirely...
Rubbish.
Yeah.
I tell you what I also found very interesting was that McIntyre reports that the police actually had to pay for their cartridges, sixpence per shot,
yeah. In a lot of cases, many of them never fired revolvers in their whole career in the police force.
Well, they weren't paid very well, and I can only imagine that you'd be very loath to shoot your wages away.
Oh, dear.
Now, can you recollect from your reading of the manuscript and the events that actually led up to the shooting? And can you recall what McIntyre reported in terms of the actual shootout and how it came about and what happened?
Well, there were four in the party, like I said earlier, being Kennedy, Scanlon, Lonigan and McIntyre. And anyhow, they decided that Kennedy and Scanlon would go out and search for Kellys, and McIntyre and Lonigan would stay back at the camp. And they'd been there and they'd slept the night earlier, the night before, and they didn't have a guard on the camp with four men. They slept in the tent all night and they had a very uncomfortable night, and nothing happened. And on departure, Kennedy said to my great-grandfather, he said, perhaps you could shoot a kangaroo for some food, because all they had was flour and water and tea. And he said, get some ferns and put them in the bed, because the bedding was very uncomfortable. They slept on their waterproof coats.
Right.
And it was extremely uncomfortable. So they were looking for a little bit of luxury when they were expecting to come back to a kangaroo barbecuing on the stove and perhaps some warm tea, and they came back to an ambush.
So how was the ambush set up? Can you recall?
Well, the Kellys, I think, were brilliant at what... Well, Ned Kelly was brilliant, so he used all the disguise he could, and he came in through the swampy area. And the four of them, they just bailed McIntyre and Lonigan up, and Lonigan, very early in the piece, made a dash for his gun, and he had a shot to his eye, shot through the eye, and fell dead instantly.
That would have to have been a very lucky shot, wouldn't it?
It would have, I think, yeah. Because although Kelly said it was he regarded it as a master shot.
Listen to older voices, reliving the spirit of Australia.
You know, we've already determined that the rifles weren't all that terrific in those days. And in fact, just as an aside, I remember reading that Ned's rifle, the stock and barrel, were actually held together with fencing wire.
Yes, that's right.
So to shoot a man in the eye on the run with that rifle... was very unlucky, really, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah. So, Lonigan gets shot in the eye. What does McIntyre do?
Well, I think McIntyre probably would have gone into some sort of shutdown mode and started to think about self-preservation probably from there on, and I would have thought most of the time he would have been imagining that he would be the next one.
Did they actually capture him at that stage, the Kellys?
Capture?
McIntyre.
Yes, he was. He had his arms up, hands up in the air.
Right, he dove up. That took him.
He was captured. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the idea? Was it to wait till the other police came back and capture them as well, or do you know what?
Well, I think Ned instigated some reconnaissance on the thing and was asking all the questions about the place, finding out what sort of arms they had, likely when they'd be coming back and why they were there, and he had a lot of questions, you know.
Ned was a fairly calm, settled person, wasn't he?
But not, seems to be, yeah.
Seems to be.
Yeah.
But I understand Dan Kelly was the opposite.
Dan was the one that my great-grandfather took exception to. And he said he had a grotesque, he dressed in a grotesque manner with ill-fitting clothes that were sizes way above his stature. And he had a laugh like a hyena. Apparently my great-grandfather must have been to a zoo somewhere to know what a hyena laughs like.
I believe your grandfather wrote that he found Dan Kelly really quite hysterical at times.
That's right.
Not funny,
yeah.
Hysterical, but
yeah.
Crazy hysteria.
Yeah.
So what about the other two? Were they as notorious as Dan and Ned, or were they just follow-ons, do you think?
Steve Hart, I don't seem to know much about, but Joe Byrne had a bit of a compassionate way to him. You know, like he was, there was obviously a lot of tension with this group by this time, and I think that perhaps Joe Byrne was a little bit more quiet and he was able to be civil. He spoke to McIntyre in a more civil manner.
So at this stage we've got Lonigan dead, we've got McIntyre captive. Do the other two police come back while McIntyre's still in captivity, or has McIntyre escaped when they come back?
No, it would have been 5 p.m. when they were initially bailed up by the Kellys, and it must have been fairly light because it doesn't say exactly, from what I've read, what time they came in, but it was could have been a couple of hours later, I would imagine. Could have been towards 7 o'clock. And
sort of twilightish, probably.
Yeah, and I think probably that was the time that Kelly, well, they came back and Kelly was, they all thought it was a joke. Sergeant Kennedy and Scanlon came back and it's actually Kelly who said, bail up or hands up, and they thought it was McIntyre and Scanlon having a joke on them.
McIntyre and Lonigan?
McIntyre and Lonigan, sorry, yeah. And anyhow, it wasn't long. Scanlon was shot first, and by this time...
And was he killed with that shot?
Not quite sure if he was shot with one shot, I think. I think he had a shoulder shot or something, but he must have been disposed of later.
Yes.
And then Kennedy, he went... knelt down on the right flank of his horse, I think, and then dismounted, and he was shot, also wounded, and then he was shot by Ned Kelly, I believe, with a shotgun.
Was death what we call today in cold blood, or was it part of a shootout? Do you recall?
What would I think it would be?
Did Kennedy fire back? Was there a gun battle?
I don't think he exchanged any shots. I don't think he would have had time.
So Ned didn't have to kill him because he hadn't actually shot at Ned at that point?
No.
So that really sort of starts to dispense with the myth of Ned Kelly as a hero, because really at the end of the day, whilst I know he did do some things for the local people and obviously helped them out in times of need, according to stories, but at the same time, he didn't really hesitate to kill a man.
That's right, yeah. It didn't take much to push him over the edge.
A sergeant and three constables rode out from Mansfield town at the end of last October for to hunt the Kellys down. They started for the Wombat Hills and found it quite a lark to be camped upon the borders of a creek called Stringy Bark. When Scanlon and the sergeant rode away to search the scrub, leaving McIntyre and Lonigan in camp to cook the grub. Ned Kelly and his comrades came to take a nearer look, for being short of blood they wished to interview the cook. Troopers at the camp alone, they were well pleased to see, watching while a billy boiled to make their pints of tea. They smoked and chatted gaily, never thinking of alarms, till they heard the dreaded cry behind, "Bail up, lay down your arms." It was later in the afternoon, the sergeant and his mate came riding blithely through the bush to meet their cruel fate. "The Kellys have the drop on you," the prisoners cried aloud, but the troopers took it as a joke and sat their horses proud. Then Trooper Scanlon made a move, his rifle to unsling, but to his heart a bullet sped, and death was in its sting. Then Kennedy leapt off his mount and ran for cover near, and fought most gamely to the last, for all his life held dear. The sergeant's horse raced through the camp, escaping friend and foe, and McIntyre, his life at stake, sprang to the saddle bow. He galloped far into the night, a haunted, harassed man, then planted in a wombat hole till morning light began. At dawn of day he hastened out and made for Mansfield town to break the news that made men vow to shoot the killers down. So from that hour the Kelly gang was hunted far and wide, like outlaw dingoes of the hills, until the day they died.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. And you're listening to a special Listen to Older Voices, where Rob Greaves is talking with Laurie Hookey, the great-grandson of Trooper McIntyre, the surviving policeman at the Stringy Bark Massacre, where the Kelly Gang killed the three other police that were with McIntyre on that day.
What were the circumstances by which your grandfather got away?
Well, as Kennedy was wounded by this time and dismounted from his horse, and my great-grandfather ran alongside his horse down apparently into the creek and mounted the horse, and I would say the horse was pretty, it probably had the jitters, you know, gunfire and, sure, you know, all this yelling and screaming and whatever would be going on. And he sort of was able to mount the horse, and he rode for some distance, and his foot fell out of the stirrup, and he sort of went through, like, brush, and the brush was obscuring a low-lying limb, and that knocked him in the chest and the thighs, apparently, and he got off the horse. And he realised that the horse was becoming a bit of a problem, as far as it was very nervous, and he wanted it to to move, go slower, and it wanted to run, so he actually took the saddle and the bridle and everything off the horse and hid it in the ferns, and then he hid himself.
Putting yourself in his place, he must have been very scared at that point, because he was being chased, wasn't he?
He was chased, yeah.
Yes, he was being chased.
I'm not quite sure if Kelly's horses would have been still saddled and that at the stage. I'm not quite sure about that, but Kennedy's horse was an opportunity for anybody to, even for Kelly to have pursued him on that himself.
Yes.
For that matter, you know.
Join Laurie, Mary and myself next week for the continuation of our story and investigation into the matters of the Kelly Gang as reported through the eyes of Thomas McIntyre, as well as the events leading up to Ned's eventual capture. That's next week, the story of McIntyre and Kelly on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is podcast to you through the Toorak Times and TAG.